This is People's Tribune Radio. I'm Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, what started out as people dreaming revolution across the country is increasingly becoming a reality. Today, we look at the Saving the Soul of America, Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. What happens when a political social justice organization and a religious justice ministry join forces in California's Bay Area to fight for economic human rights? They join forces for a march and caravan from San Jose through the East Bay Corridor of Northern California to protest, educate, and document that poverty is an economic human rights violation.
We can eliminate poverty tomorrow. We can build houses for everybody that needs them that can be produced in a day. We could use this technology to provide the amounts of food with minimum labor. I mean, we could do these things, but we need a different kind of prioritization.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. From August 26th through September 2nd of this year, members of the Women's Economic Agenda Project and the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry took part in a march and caravan from San Jose through the East Bay Corridor of Northern California to protest, educate, and document that poverty is an economic human rights violation. The march and caravan was entitled Saving the Soul of America. In late September, several leaders of the march and caravan came to Nevada City, California for a live radio broadcast on community radio station KVMR-FM. One of those leaders was Ethel Long Scott, executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project, also known as WEAP.
You know, it's interesting, we're on the eve of a major gubernatorial race in our state, here the fifth largest economy on the planet, yet more than 24% of California's children live in low-wage families. Their families frequently have to make a decision between feeding themselves or paying the rent. And it's clear we need direction and leadership that we are not finding in all of the debates from the gubernatorial candidates. They have not put as a primary issue eradicating this silent epidemic in our country and in the state of California, which is the growing epidemic of poverty. And the growing numbers of Californians who are part of that poverty population. The soul of our country is sick because it's ignoring the plight of growing numbers of families, men, women, and children. We know that we had to step forward and take our freedom ride, to take our message, not only of hope, but of the need for compassion and the need to take a moral stand for economic rights today. So together, we set out from about August 26th to September 2nd on a freedom bus ride, an eight-day freedom bus ride in March from the East Bay Corridor, from San Jose to Vallejo, and ended on September 2nd in Oakland. This effort was a partnership between both a political community-based organization and a spiritual justice ministry. The Women's Economic Agenda Project being the community-based effort, and the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, CHAM, is the justice ministry out of San Jose. For the Women's Economic Agenda Project, this represents about the seventh in a series of mobilizations aimed at building this new movement for economic justice. We build this as a freedom ride against poverty and aimed at helping really to unite Californian workers who have been displaced, the young, the poor, the homeless, those cast aside really by the new and old economies. This combination march and freedom bus tour highlighted and documented the shameful economic human rights violations in some of the poorest and most destitute areas here in Northern California region, and also expanded the growing state and national movement known as the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. We believe that those 8 days touched hearts and, in fact, changed lives. We traveled from city to city, borrowing carpet, floor, whatever food that people would provide. We conducted teach-ins about our economic human rights. We also conducted teach-ins and documentation about what are the solutions that are being hammered out by workers across this country. We reached more than 3 million people's homes during that 8-day period. Working together to demand solutions is the only way we're going to begin to see any justice in this country and in our state. We began also to break the silence on poverty. We countered the isolation that is felt by millions of poor Americans who fear that they are alone in this crushing uphill battle for economic justice and what should really be for economic security.
The religious community is increasingly becoming more of an integral part of the social and economic justice movement. Sandy Perry is an outreach minister with CHAM, the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry.
We were absolutely convinced that housing was a human right. And it was very clear to us at that time San Jose was just beginning a process of redevelopment. Downtown, old SRO hotels were being torn down. People were being left out in the streets with nothing. Fancy new luxury hotels were being built with city funds, with taxpayer money. And it was just such a blatant injustice. And it was creating such a sense of outrage that CHAM actually, it began as Student Homeless Alliance. It began to grow and have a real impact on the politics in the city. I was raised as a Quaker in Massachusetts, and I rejoined the Quakers in the mid-1990s in San Jose simply because it seemed that the whole social change movement, it needed a soul. It needed a soul. It needed depth. It needed to speak to the hearts of the people. If we were going to be successful, we had to reach out to the American people and speak a language that they could understand, that responded to their experience. This is the true message of Christianity, and it's straight in the gospel, and of course it's been distorted over the years, but if you go back to the source, Jesus was about lifting up the poor. That's who he spent his time with. That's what he spent his time doing. That's who he ministered. I was listening to this tape the other night from a radical Episcopal minister who said that people were complaining to him because he always said that God preferred the poor, which is, if you look at the gospel, there's no doubt that that's true. And people said, well, how could God prefer the poor? Isn't that biased? Isn't that not being fair? And he said, well, if God doesn't prefer the poor, nobody else will. We felt in order to lift our spirits, in order to keep on track, in order to overcome all the daily problems, the daily struggles, the daily fights, all the things in society which weigh us down. And this is, I mean, in terms of people that are homeless, it's just a huge mass of problems. I mean, depression, abuse, histories of abuse, relationship problems, in addition to all the material problems. And almost any problem that you can imagine ended up in our church. And so we found that in order to do anything in the way of service or advocacy, we also had to do ministry. We had to do spiritual healing. We had to speak to people's inner lives and inner demons and figure out how to drive out those demons through love. What we say in our ministry is that we have no doctrine except love. That to us is what Christianity is all about. And that's what we do our best to practice. We work hard to lift people's spirits in order not only to survive for another day, but to fight for a new life. It's obvious what happened to Christianity. It's happened to almost every other religion over history. It happened to Judaism so many times you can't count. Judaism started out as a religion of liberation. It started out as a religion of one of the greatest revolutionary events in all of history was the Exodus from Egypt. And that was the whole basis of it. And in fact, every time Judaism would go astray, they'd remind ourselves, our God was about freeing ourselves from Egypt, and we can't allow ourselves or any of among us to become another Pharaoh. And so there were prophets who arose over and over again in the history of Judaism, and Jesus was part of that tradition, and Christianity was born as the same idea of reestablishing the ideals, the high ideals of religion as a liberation, as a liberation from oppression, a liberation from slavery.
Maliaga Togo Togo is a deacon with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry.
As a religious leader in the ministry of God, I ask sometimes whether America still have a soul. We commended all the Christian religious groups that are doing the feeding, the sheltering, and so forth. But where we come from as a justice ministry, it's about your rights as a human being existing on earth. You did not end up in this earth by choice. You were here for a reason. And you're a child of God. And if we so believe in that, and as a Christian, I've said this several times in speaking engagement that I've been to, that you go out there doing what you're doing in your daily lives and see the injustice that is going on to your brother and your sister. It might be a total stranger, but still, the bottom line, he's a child of God. But as a child of God yourself, what would you do? Most of the time we turn our, you know, our cheek. But, you know, I came long ways. And I, you know, I come from a background of a Pacific Islander, which homelessness doesn't exist. It was only one cannery that employed the whole island. But we took care of one another. Love and compassion had a big meaning in our lives. And the love for one another means a lot. You know, the less that we had, I never seen once a homeless person or a hungry person. Come to America, now, the land of opportunity, the richest country there is in the world, you know, and we so-called believe in God. In God we trust. We should change that because I don't think there's so much in that now, but it's not because of God's fault. If we look at the history, you know, in our schools, shootings, our children killed on the street because of the drug epidemic, and families involving domestic violence, why is that? Is it their fault? No, because of the system that we're in. But from a religious standpoint, as a Christian, if we talk about the Bible, the book of love, compassion, from Genesis to Revelation, it doesn't say too much about Jesus hung around with the rich or trying to spend money with the rich. If anything, he became homeless to convey the message. That's what he came for. So, you know, from a person of a religious, from a religious standpoint, what would he do if he was on earth today? There's solutions to these social justice issues that are broad. And not only that, it has to start with you, in your heart. And in order for you to feel love for someone, you got to start with yourself.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Mike Thornton. Our topic today is the Saving the Soul of America March and Caravan, part of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. Diana Paulson works as an organizer with WEAP, the Women's Economic Agenda Project.
And this 8-day bus tour, just to reiterate, it was to do three main things, and those three things were to protest, to educate, and to document that poverty is an economic human rights violation. And our goal was to link up with other poor and working people that are struggling to survive. We wanted to connect with communities that are grappling with similar issues, such as the lack of affordable housing, health care, and living wage jobs. This campaign, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, is 5 years old, but it really comes from Martin Luther King's Poor People's Campaign, when in the last years of his life, he shifted his focus on civil rights and shifted it to economic human rights. CHAM and WEAP both together have connected with groups on this bus tour in Hayward, Vallejo, and Richmond to spread the message of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what we found in each of these cities. In Hayward, we had a rally and a teach-in at a park in one of the poorest parts of Hayward. It was in South Hayward. And this park, you know, once we were at the rally, we found out from the local collaborative that it used to be a drug-infested area and it was too dangerous to go into. And through the will of this neighborhood collaborative, the park had been taken back, and that was a tremendous success. But you know, the problems related to poverty still existed in this area, although the park has been designated as a safe place. We had a march scheduled in one of the poorest areas of Hayward, but we didn't march because of the ongoing shootings that had been happening. A young man's funeral was happening in the neighborhood that we were going to march through. And, you know, it really gets to the heart of why our message is so important. It's about sharing these broad solutions so that poverty isn't just shifted from one place to another, but it's eliminated. When we went to Vallejo, we found, you know, Vallejo was actually formed because of the Mare Island shipyard that was close by. And this shipyard closed down about 5 years ago. It was the main employer of the city. And it devastated the city economically. And now the main source of income for the city and the main employer is around tourism. And there's an amusement park, it's Marine World, that's based in Vallejo. And it's now the main employer of the city. And it's a non-union amusement park and typically pays minimum wage. And this is a trend that we're seeing throughout the country. We're seeing, you know, good jobs with benefits are being replaced with new and fewer jobs that typically pay low wages and don't have benefits. And it's getting harder and harder for the typical family to make it. We also found in Vallejo that government housing has been, it has closed down. There were tons of boarded up housing that remains empty while people were sleeping on the street or in the only homeless shelter in the city. But ultimately in Vallejo, we really found that people were isolated and poverty was hidden. It wasn't being talked about openly. We stayed at a shelter, actually, the only shelter in the city. And you know, we found that our message was welcome because our ultimate solution isn't just having shelters and food banks, but our ultimate solution is having a house for every human being in this country, and not just food banks, but you know, people able to have the income so that they can provide the food for their own families. Richmond, you know, was an incredible experience when we went through there. We went through a real isolated community of North Richmond, which is surrounded by oil refineries. And these refineries, you know, they have severe environmental spills that affect people's health. The problems that people are faced with are, you know, extreme housing shortages, health problems due to this environmental contamination, poor educational system, a lack of jobs, and hardly any jobs at a living wage. The average income of this neighborhood was $4,600 a year. And we marched for miles in North Richmond through the oil industrial iron triangle. We passed contaminated brown fields and deserted factories and overcrowded homes. And a lot of us, it was felt like we could have been in the heart of Mississippi. The extreme poverty, you know, was beyond what many of us had ever seen. And one story that we heard is that, you know, the chemical spills happen often in this area, and the huge oil refineries that are there, mainly Chevron, have a set amount of money that they will give to people when a spill happens. And some of these community members, and remember, you know, people are making just $4,600 a year, are relying on these spills because it supplements their income. These are economic human rights violations, so it was really important that we linked up with these, you know, collaboratives, the neighborhood groups, and the churches, because, you know, we found everywhere we went that all these different groups are grappling with the same issues. And it was really important to link up, share this broader vision, share strategies and solutions. A lot of people feel isolated in the struggles that they go through. There really is a growing anxiety amongst the American people with the situation that they and their families are facing, not able to feel secure in the most basic of things, you know, food, clothing, housing, healthcare. And there's an urgency in this economic crisis that's not being talked about. And the march we found for many people was such a blessing because it really spoke to this anxiety that people are feeling. This growing crisis that no one is talking about, the newspapers aren't recognizing it, the downsizing, the layoffs, the inability to feed our families in the richest country in the world. And in the process of this march and all the educating we would do, we really found that a lot of the marchers and a lot of the people that we met, because we were speaking to these problems, they started to realize, okay, this isn't my own individual problem, this is more of a systematic problem, because I'm not alone in this struggle. Other people are struggling with the same things. And through this realization, people began to realize that their contribution was just vitally important. We see this connection with all these different groups and the people that we met as a beginning. And we knew that we didn't want to just blow through town and do some educating and meet folks, but we wanted to set up something sustainable. So we set up Poor People's Economic Human Rights Committees that can continue to build this campaign, shine the light on poverty, offer some hope, get to know the solutions. You know, we've been able to form over 24 committees across the state of California. There are 5 main guidelines for having a committee, and anyone really can, you know, form one of their own. The first guideline is to collect documentation of economic human rights violations. The next guideline is to frame local battles in terms of economic human rights. And both WEEP and CHAM have found this tremendously effective and so important. Linking this fight to human rights, it really gets to the heart of what we're fighting for. It offers a broader vision that allows us to stay focused on these long-term goals that we're fighting, and it gives us a model and a standard that we're really fighting for. We're fighting for these economic human rights for every human being. Guideline number 3 is to protest that poverty is an economic human rights violation. And protesting poverty is a great way to make sure that the voices of, you know, poor and working people are heard that so often go unheard. Guideline 4 is to get to know the Labor Party campaigns for economic justice. And this is so important because so often, you know, you see protesters or activists, you know, and a lot of the criticism is that, you know, oh, you guys are just talking about problems. But we're not doing that. We're talking about the problems and we're shining a light on them, but we're also coming to the table with concrete solutions. And these are the solutions of the Labor Party. And it includes the Just Healthcare campaign, the Free Higher Education campaign, the Right to a Living Wage Job, and the Resolution on Affordable Housing. And knowing these campaigns arms us with, you know, broad-scale solutions to the problems that we all face. And it allows us to stay focused and not accept the Band-Aid solutions that are sometimes given. And the last guideline, and which is so important, is to educate about economic human rights. Educate about the growing crisis that's happened. Educate that these things are a violation of your human rights. And, you know, about the solutions that we're bringing to the table.
Andre Dawkins is also with the Women's Economic Agenda Project.
Oakland, for one, is known by a lot of businesses as the second Silicon Valley. Right now, with our new mayor bringing in, well, his promise to bring in 10,000 new residents into Oakland, he also... brought in a whole lot of computerized industry into Oakland, which is over 2,000. However, most of those jobs that are in Oakland are not for Oakland residents. And that leaves a high rate of unemployment in Oakland. Matter of fact, it's one of the highest in the Bay Area. So this created a frustration in Oakland. The whole city is in an uproar. And the only thing the leaders today can think of is bringing in more police. The people of Oakland is crying out for solutions. The leaders of Oakland right now are turning a deaf ear. One thing that was really touching is that the marchers who was on the march got to see for themselves the corruption of injustice that was happening in the United States. The richest country in the world. California, the fifth largest economy in the world, but yet in the heart of the Bay Area in Oakland, chaos is erupting day and night. And so this campaign brings solutions because no politicians never knock on your door unless they come to sanction you out of your house or the police is coming to arrest you to put you in some prison. That because they want you out of the city. 10,000 new resident means that somebody has to die. The hope of the city, especially of the youth of Oakland, is gone. It's shredded. But the human rights monitors are there to knock on doors and teach them, first of all, about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Articles 23, 25, and 26, these rights states that you have a right to a living wage job, you have a right to health care, you have a right to housing, you have a right to free education. And we ask them to fill out their stories, because a lot of time, you know, people are hopeless and they act out in rage as is going on in Oakland. And when you give them opportunity to share their stories, you connect people together. And they are guaranteed these rights. However, these rights have been violated. It's not your fault. We understand it's not your fault that you're killing one another. We understand it's not your fault that you can't go out and get a living wage job. We understand it's not your fault that you want to go to school, but you can't afford to go to school. So you have to go out in the street corners and sling dope and rival over a turf that even don't even belong to you. But this gives us the opportunity, once we raise the consciousness, that there are solutions.
Andre Dawkins, Diana Polson, and Ethel Long Scott of the Women's Economic Agenda Project, Maliaga Togo Togo, and Sandy Perry of the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry on the Saving the Soul of America March and Caravan, part of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society with social and economic justice for all. If you'd like more information about the League or our other print or audio publications, you can contact us by calling 1-800-691-6888, 1-800-691-6888, or on the internet at www.lrna.org. My name is Mike Thornton, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.